Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 382 for comics originally released on December 3rd, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC is Secret Six number 1. Now, this is the first time the Secret Six as a team is showing up in the New 52. They did have a popular series also written by Gail Simone like this one prior to the New 52. And this kind of assembles the team and kind of goes from there. Did you read the previous Secret Six series?
Is that the one with Bane in it?
At one point it had Bane. It had Catman, Deadshot. I'm trying to remember who else. Because the team rotated a bit. They had a couple of different people. It was, I'd have to look it up to see who all was in there.
The answer is no. But, I remember it vaguely, but I didn't read it.
Okay. One of the things that really stood out for me, there were two things at the start of this that really stood out. One was the art style. And there were places I really liked the art and other places I really didn't like the art. And it's a bit of a pronounced style, both in terms of the line work and in terms of the coloring. And there were a couple of places where I couldn't really make out everything that was going on. There was some places where stuff was more implied than really drawn. And there were other places where some of the panels were just either too dark or just very monochromatic. Did you feel that way about the art, or was this just, something that... Because I think it just wasn't to my taste. I don't think it was bad.
Yeah, it seemed like there were... It kind of fluctuated a little bit. I think I read somewhere there might have been multiple inkers. The same penciler, but multiple inkers.
Ken Lashley did the art and did some of the inking, and Drew Gracie, maybe, did some of the inks also. So, yeah, again, the inks were split. I hadn't picked up on that in the credits, but that kind of makes sense. I wonder which was which. And then Jason Wright did the colors. And there are some places, again, great stuff. Other places where, like the title page, it's a splash page, and it's just a little chaotic. The eye, at least my eye, isn't drawn in any particular area or direction to really focus on anything. But again, I couldn't tell how much was that was just me or how much of that was really just on the artist and the art team.
Yeah, I mean, besides the little unevenness, it didn't really detract from the storytelling that much for me. I thought I was able to follow along just fine, and I thought the art was solid.
Okay. I've seen art where it just I can't follow, and I was able to get most of what was going on. There are a few places I would have liked it to have been clearer, but it did not really seriously hurt my reading of the story. The other thing I had noticed is this Catman is fairly different than the one we've seen before. And I like the previous versions. Frankly, I think this one seems to have a little bit more potential. That having been said, they established early on, he doesn't like to be confined. And man, they hammer that home throughout the episode, the issue and stuff.
Yeah, they said it a few times, just in case you missed it.
It got really hard to miss. Not a critical flaw or anything like that, but a lack of subtlety, I guess would be the way I'd put it. In my mind, this was very much the opening chapter to the series, not an opening story, or really, for that matter, a complete issue in some respects. We get the group assembled. It just kind of happens. It's not clear why these people were brought together, but we at least get the team together. We get, who all six of them are, but not quite. We get introduced to them, but we don't really, in my opinion, get to know them all that well. So we've got Catman, Porcelain, Ventriloquist, a new Ventriloquist that we hadn't seen before, I don't think ever. Character called Big Shot, which I also think is brand new. Strix, who was in the Talon from Birds of Prey. And Black Alice, who was in either Birds of Prey, Secret Six, or one of the previous, one of the pre- Flashpoint pre-New 52 titles. I forget which one. Interesting mix of characters, but I could see somebody coming into this and thinking, okay, I wasn't sure this was going to sell somebody on the title. Because I kind of came out of it thinking there was a lot of quote-unquote mystery, which was more just unanswered questions, unexplained stuff, versus anything to really sink my teeth into other than why were these six put together what's going on here.
Now, the ventriloquist, I thought was from, was it a Batgirl annual? Or maybe a detective annual? I remember that ventriloquist.
Okay. I think you're right. I think it may have been from Batgirl.
And I loved that issue. And so it was really cool to see her again. And I thought, like half of this team, three quarters of this team, I'm really psyched about. I mean, I thought Black Alice was great. I thought Strix was cool. Porcelain was cool. Yeah, really was psyched about Ventriloquist. I really like, I mean, I know that you have to bring the team together, but I really like the way they did it. And throwing them in this room, you know, they're all trapped in this little confined space. You know, we get introduced to everybody as our main character kind of wakes up. I love that. This communication from this disembodied voice outside, and the what is the secret question that's being asked, and there's a time that's winding down, and there's a real sense of urgency in this as you're going from panel to panel. And you know, so we've got this ticking clock, we've got these people trying to be introduced and get up to speed after coming, basically from being unconscious. And we have all that pressure going on. And then we also have, the added pressures of, just who's who and who's in control. And then we find some surprises in this room as well. And it felt really great. I loved it. I loved the way it's the tension was. And, I was on the edge of my seat as I flipped through the pages here. I'm psyched for the next issue. They did a great job, I think, as a first issue.
Interesting, because, I mean, I agree we've got the team assembled, the ticking clock, a few questions to answer, that sort of thing. But to me, it was feeling more like almost a cliche opening to like a suspense thriller. I don't want to say a horror film, but, it seems like something you could flip on the Sci-Fi Channel. It seems like, I don't know if it was The Cube or a few things. Not that I tend to watch these movies, but the premise always seemed to be, six people wake up in a room, one of them's trying to kill the others. Who is it? Sort of, it felt almost along those lines. A group of strangers trapped in a location, they've got to either band together or die. I think there's more to it than that, but I don't think we got more to it than that in this issue.
One of the downsides of this issue was the fact that you didn't get to spend much time with some of the other characters. So you got a cursory introduction to Porcelain and Black Alice and the Ventriloquist and Strix, and you got a little more time with the big guy, and then of course Catman was kind of the dominant character in this. So that's kind of a shortcoming, but it didn't feel like just an opening chapter. It felt like pilot and in a show that I want to watch.
Interesting. All right. I guess for me, the biggest failing of this issue was it didn't have enough room or enough page count to really, I think, set the scene well enough for me. And clearly you feel differently on that, and I respect that. I don't think this was bad, but it failed to completely hook me on this. I'm still kind of, let's see where it goes. And it didn't have enough room or time to really establish itself, so it's kind of hard for me to see how it's going to like stand out from all the other titles. And I mean that more in terms of the general quality, not in terms of the plot line, because clearly the plot line is as we've discussed, they're locked in a room, what happens to them there. It's not unusual for a title to need its opening story arc to accomplish all of that, and there's nothing inherently wrong with that. It's, I think, a little disappointing these days sometimes. But there's also some premises that, the 22 or 20 pages, whatever you've got in an opening issue, simply isn't enough for that. And that was kind of what I felt here. So I'm figuring the opening arc, they deal with some basic mysteries and get out of the box. But after that, I have no clue where it's going to go, because that'll be determined presumably by what some of these mysteries they unravel or answers they reveal in the next couple issues in this opening arc.
In the previous volumes of this, were they like Suicide Squad?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. I mean, they were not literally Suicide Squad. The Secret Six has had a long history in the DC Universe. Originally, way, way back in the day, they were just six kind of adventurers, random people who were assembled by Mockingbird. And it was kind of like a Charlie's Angels thing where, again, disembodied voice, giving him instructions, giving him missions. Then in Action Comics, when it was weekly, so this is around 600 to 642, there was a new Secret Six, and these people all had kind of like cybernetic implants to give them some powers or whatever. They were enhanced humans, but, you know, who is Mockingbird, who's pulling the strings, who's giving them their missions, that kind of a deal. And then later after that, we started to get the groupings of villains and more of this sort of a Secret Six kind of a deal. So the premise has morphed over the decades, which is fine.
But the conceit is probably still these are not heroes, but they're kind of bad guys, but they're going to be doing good things, hopefully.
Presumably, it all comes down to who is Mockingbird, which is, you know, essentially the disembodied voice here, whatever name they decide to give it in this case. Mm-hmm. You know, and at various points, it's been various people. I think Amanda Waller was that at one point. And that might have even been during the Action Comics Weekly, I forget.
Okay.
So it comes down to who's pulling the strings, what do they want them to do. Clearly, the stakes are kind of high here, given what happens to Agent Robbins and such. So, you know, I'm curious where they're going. I think they've got some interesting characters. I just need more time with them. So it's one that, you know, I was perfectly content with, but it didn't stand out in terms of quality, in terms of content, in terms of concept. So for me, it was pretty much just an average title, a 3 out of 5.
I have it as a high 4. I really enjoyed this issue. I think it's really captured my imagination and propelling me into the next issue. Did what you're supposed to do for a number one. So I'm very psyched about it. And especially for DC, I've had some uneven titles, uneven weeks of reviewing DC things. So it's nice to get something, another good solid title under my belt here. And I'm real happy about that.
Good. No, I'm glad you liked it. It's one of those things that different things for different people. Sometimes the very reason I might like something would be why you'd hate it or vice versa. You know, it's so I like the fact that they're branching out, they're trying different things, and I want to see them be successful on their titles, even if it's not necessarily successful for me. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is Guardians 3000, number 3. This is kind of sort of a Guardians of the Galaxy title. It's taking place in the year, you know, I think 3014 AD. Guardians of the Galaxy was kind of, sort of, but not quite, like a Legion of Superheroes sort of a thing for Marvel back in the day. Then, about a decade ago, I guess, Abnett and Lanning introduced kind of the newer version. But these are the classic characters that really I got introduced to back in like the late 80s, early 90s and whatnot. I don't go back to when they first appeared way back in the day. And I think this is going to eventually tie into the main Guardians of the Galaxy storyline, but it's all dealing with how in the future time is unraveling and things are going amiss. Overall, I enjoyed many aspects of this story. I thought the opening aspect introduced some cool potential, but it also had zero payoff or relevance within this issue. Again, not common, or not uncommon, given ongoing story arcs. They gotta set something up and it plays out later. But I kind of left this issue, again, there was aspects of the art style that were more exaggerated, almost an Humberto Ramos-ish style. Who is the artist on this? This is, they're on the last page of the story, isn't it? Gerardo Sandoval. It's just a kind of a pumped up style, if you will. These guys are big, they're muscular, they're doing, you know, grimacing faces kind of a thing. Nothing wrong with it. It's just, you know, not my first choice for art styles. There were a few places the humor felt a little forced, but really the big thing I left the issue with is thinking not a whole lot happened. We find out a couple of guys survived previous events in the title, and really I think you could have skipped this issue and in not necessarily the next, probably, but at least reading the following couple of issues from this, you could have guessed almost everything that happened here at a plot level, if not, certainly not the actual conversations, exchanges, and stuff. But it seemed like non-essential reading, and I expect, I guess, more plot progression, more payoff for a $3.99 comic than I felt this gave us. It almost felt like it was, I don't want to say marking time, but it's written more for the trade than for the issue, almost. Tell me I'm wrong on this, Drew. Tell me you loved it.
I didn't hate it.
okay.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I especially liked the futuristic Iron Man that they
the Stark.
The Stark, yeah, that was cool. And had a kind of an Iron Giant thing going on there. That was nice. The female lead is very likable, mm-hmm. and you really root for her. Some of these other supporting characters a little more interchangeable for me, less to kind of grab onto. But I think it's pretty solid. It's nothing. There's so many books, John, that you can say, well, I could have skipped this one and, you know, just read the next one and I would have been fine. There's so many that are like that. So it's hard for me to just say that this is the only guilty party here.
And I'm not suggesting it is. You are completely right that some of these things, when I say either the art's not to my liking or they didn't have much plot progression or you know, whatever, I'm not saying it's unique to the issue we're reviewing, but just that it applies to the issue we're reviewing. Because you're right. There are a lot of comics where you can almost skip every other issue and still figure out what's going on. I don't necessarily approve of that, and I certainly don't want to encourage that, be it on a $2.99, a $3.99, regardless of the price point. I want more to happen.
My biggest problem with this is the dialogue and the incessant need of Dan Abnett, a very talented writer, to write invented curse words throughout his book.
That was what you found out of the dialogue interesting. Oh, okay.
That was the worst. That was the what took me out of it the most. Now, in the earlier issues of this, I thought it was very obtuse with some of the science fiction language that was being used, uh-huh. that I thought was unnecessarily complex. But now in this issue in particular, and some of the earlier issues as well, you know, they have all these invented curse words, and either, you know, use the curse word that we understand or don't use curse words. I don't think flarking is something that you really need to insert in every third panel. It takes me completely out of it. I don't like it in Spidey 2099, and I don't like it here either. That's my baggage. Remember, I don't like invented curse words.
Remember a few minutes ago I was saying one of us might hate something and it works for the other one of us? This is one of those. Because I would actually prefer the flarking to the profanity. It gets the point across.
I would rather have none.
That's fair. I wouldn't object to that either.
Yeah, if you want to be all ages, be all ages. Everybody knows the F word that you're inserting here.
Yeah.
So why are you pretending like you're not actually using the F word?
Exactly. They're not fooling anybody is what it comes down
to. Yeah, they're not fooling anybody. So either you want to keep your T+ rating or whatever, then you get it out of there and be smarter about the way you want to use your language.
I wasn't expecting you to say that about the dialogue. Where the dialogue really was noticeable to me, and I'm not sure how best to phrase it, but it was all movie speak. It was catchphrases. It was the almost forced witty banter. You know, at the center staple, I told you to hide. We started to, then Gina kind of reminded me, and she cuts in, I've got guns. She's got guns. You know, kind of a, you know, like there's this, like it's written for movie dialogue, for the snappy patter kind of a thing.
That exchange worked for me.
Some of them do, some of them don't. There were a couple later where it just felt forced. And I'm not saying it never worked in the book. Again, there were a couple of places I thought it did, you know, but it didn't ring true overall. And there were a few other things with this it didn't ring true. We get a character coming in late in the game in this issue, makes a big splashy entrance. I didn't think he was drawn particularly well. And then we get a reveal on the last page that it builds up to. And I'm like, okay, that was supposed to be an aha or ooh or some kind of a moment on that last page. And it just totally fell flat. Why was that a splash page? What was I supposed to get out of that? What moment of recognition should I have had? Because I almost had it, but it's like a swing and a miss. They needed to give me more for me to recognize whatever I was supposed to recognize there for it to have some kind of impact. I mean, did the last page work for you? I mean, I don't want to give it away. Two, I can't give it all away because I didn't get it all. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it didn't feel that revolutionary to me. The final page.
Yeah, the reveal didn't reveal anything, right?
No, not really. Maybe it was supposed to be more than I picked up on. I think the Alex Ross covers, I forgot to mention those. They're beautiful.
Oh yeah.
Of course you would expect that. So those are really nice. There's some really clever stuff here. I like the sentience, kind of patter that's going on, which you might find annoying and movie-like, but I think that worked for me. I thought it was very funny.
The Stark?
Yeah, it was chasing and they were a sentience and it was kind of robotic, of course, and kind of humorous.
That didn't really faze me either way.
I thought there's enough in here that it's pretty solid, and I've read the first three, and I'm going to continue to read this. I don't like it as much as I like Secret Six, so it's more of a high three.
Okay, all right, I can see that. For me, it was just a three, just an average book, nothing wrong with it, but nothing for me to say, oh, wow, somebody's got to go read this. Since you did like it, though, Drew, what I would recommend you consider doing is checking out the Jim Valentino volume of Guardians of the Galaxy from the 90s. That's where they introduced the Stark and some of these other things to this era of the Guardians timeline.
I have a short box of those back just waiting to be read.
Well, then you've already found them. Now you just need to find the time to read them.
I'm in good shape.
So that's half the battle. Usually the easier half. Finding the time is the harder part.
Yeah,
for me,
at
least. Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is either Tooth and Claw number 2 or The Autumnlands Tooth and Claw number 2. I will admit to still being a little confused as to what the official title is.
Yeah, it's like a Collider Federal Bureau of Physics situation, I'm thinking.
I think they went with Tooth and Claw, realized there had already been a volume of that, I think even at Image, maybe, or maybe somewhere else, and they may have had to go tweak it some, which, yeah, whatever. It happens.
And I think he touches on it in the letters page, but says he'll explain it more clearly in a future issue, exactly what happened.
Okay, cool. It's Kurt Busiek, so I mean, he's usually pretty open about that kind of stuff, which I respect. Mm. I did not pre-order this title. So when you suggested it, I looked over all the non-Marvel DC books I had for this week, and I'm like, what the hell? We'll give it a try. I went to the Image Press site. I downloaded the first and second issue. I read the first immediately prior to reading this. And this was something that, when I saw it in previews, it's like, yeah, this is going to be more fantasy and talking animals and stuff like that than I think I want. It's like, I don't know. But, it's like, hey, let's give it a shot. Go with an open mind. There's something about starting a series with a dog waking up in bed, sitting on the bed, pulling on a pair of pants. It's a funny way to start a series. Now, I've seen the anthropomorphic animals in tons of titles, from, Fables to Hepcats, on up and down. But there was an aspect of how it was done in both the first issue and this one that just put a very subtle kind of a different spin on it that I really enjoyed. And it was a little late last night when I was reading this, and I needed to read the two issues. So, when I hit that paragraph of text, a couple of paragraphs on the title page of the first issue, it's like, oh, man, I don't want prose right now. Just give me an easy book to read. Man, there was a lot of just exposition and stuff like that in the first issue.
In the first issue, yes.
But it was a 48-page comic instead of a normal 32-page comic. They were starting from ground zero. And it was, again, a fantasy kind of a storyline I usually don't gravitate towards. But man, that first issue did such a great job selling the concept, the premise, the characters, the world, the different anthropomorphic races, everything. I really enjoyed it. And I went into this issue with a very kind of positive mind frame. It's like, this is a fun world. I am curious what's going to happen. Who is this great champion? How does this play out? What's going on, etc.? And after having just read that first issue, which was both longer, had the tons of exposition, it just took a while to read, I shot through the second issue comparatively in no time. Now, I don't think it was light. I don't think it was fluffy or insubstantial, I guess is the word. I thought
it was just normal size.
It was just normal sized after an overpacked longer first issue. I think if I'd read them a month apart, I wouldn't have had that kind of comparison really to make. I thought The Great Champion was interesting. I appreciated little things like the need for a translation spell for them to understand him.
He could use a loincloth.
Yes, he definitely could. hopefully that comes soon.
That was an interesting choice.
Yeah, I didn't understand that choice as to why they went that way, but I'm sure it'll make sense eventually. I've got faith in Busick.
Yeah.
I also appreciated that not only are there rules for casting spells in this world, but there's a finite supply of energy. If one guy does it, it weakens everybody else. And, you know, that there's both actual rules and then kind of society rules and the concept of consequences. And this was just a really well done issue. It's a really good title. And I'm really glad you recommended this because, as I mentioned, I didn't pre-order this title. After reading it, I think that was a mistake. And I'm planning on adding it to my DCBS order.
Oh, that's great.
I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I mean, you were right, though, in your first call that it was going to be a fantasy and magic, and that's all in here. That's definitely all in here as well. So if that's a big turnoff for folks, yeah, definitely that's in there. But I am a sucker for the talking animals, like most of those things that I read. And this is just a little cut above, though, and a great world that's being built. And we've had three issues now, you know, because that first issue was so large. So we've really, this world has been built, and it is very large, expansive. There are a lot of floating cities up here that hopefully we'll circle back around to in the next issue. Unfortunately, through some magic problems, this city has fallen down to the ground, and they have to kind of deal with these repercussions. And it's really cool the way some of the seeds that were laying in the first issue have already come to roost in this second issue. And of course, I expect that from Kurt Busiek because he's a great writer and very smart. And so this does not disappoint in that. I think the Benjamin Dewey, the artist that draws some of a varied lineup of the Animal Kingdom, you know, mm-hmm. runs the gamut, and then some magical beasts that are thrown in there that you've never seen before, and he does a fantastic job with all these different animal types, and they're drawn very well. And so the art, I think, is top notch. The writing is top notch. The world is top notch. The plot is cool. I love this book, and I'm really glad you like it too. I wholeheartedly recommend this thing. It's a 5.
I can definitely see that. For me, I can't quite give it the 5. It's a very strong 4. It's really close to that. But having read it right on the heels of the first issue, which I thought was a lot better, I would give the first issue 5. This one I've got to give a 4. I agree with everything you're saying, though. The art is phenomenal. The different animal type people or whatever, drawing a dog person, and it's clearly a dog, it's clearly a person. I mean, and it feels natural. It's beautifully done, just again across all the different races and such. The like you mentioned, plot elements from the first issue having been set up well to give logical consequences here made sense. We get a feel for the politics in this world. There's so much of this that's done right. It's astounding. If you, like me, are not huge into the anthropomorphic animals or the fantasy stuff or whatever, and you decide to skip it like I did, give it a chance. Try that first issue. With the caveat, it's longer. It's got a lot of exposition because they cover a lot of ground to set this world up. But if you can, I mean, the fact that it's got talking animals and such, to me, adds color to it. It's not something, oh, geez, it's just for furries or anything crazy like that. No, it's a really good story, and you can get that part out of it. You know, the fact that it's got the fantasy and stuff is part and partial of the property of the material, but it's got a level of story depth and characterization and world solidification or not even sure how to phrase it. You know, there's a certain, it feels like a real cohesive thought out world. There's as much, to my mind, there's as much thought and depth to this world as, say, Lazarus by Greg Rucka.
Yeah, and it feels that big.
You know, this is something that, again, I chalked up to, you know, I dismissed out of hand based on genre and a few things like that, and I was wrong. So I thank you for recommending this. Again, I can totally see how you give it the 5 out of 5. For me, it doesn't quite get up there, partially because, again, I was just surprised how fast I read this. But again, that was right after having read the previous one, which, like you said, much longer, much more meaty.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally recommend this. It's well worth checking out. I am certain we will probably revisit this title down the line. So what else did you read this week?
Another thing that I had really dismissed, a book from Image that I had dismissed and as not being my cup of tea, was The Humans. And it's a book that is about, it's like Planet of the Apes, only in the present day, you know, where the apes are in charge. And it's written by Keenan Marshall Keller and Tom Neely. And drawn by Tom Neely. Written by Keenan Marshall Keller and drawn by Tom Neely.
Mm-hmm.
This issue 2 was out this week, and I read issue 1 and this back to back. This is like 1970s America, Vietnam War era, and it's basically the apes are in charge, and we're following a group of motorcycle gang members and meeting some of those various characters, and it's really, really, really cool. And the art is fantastic. Well drawn apes. The world is cool, and we're just now kind of scratching the surface on what it's all about and where the humans actually play into this, if at all. You see them occasionally, but they're usually in servant roles and things, and not really at the forefront. And so that's to be determined down the road. But this is a really cool, another cool, unique title from Image that I didn't see coming. I didn't think it would be for me. And it's very funny. It's very engaging. The characters, are really, really well fleshed out, and, it's a cool book. Definitely a cool book.
Cool. Good to hear.
Another thing that caught me off guard, though. That happens.
Well, and that's why it's worth, you know, getting out of your comfort zone, picking up some titles, just giving things a chance, and not just sticking to the, here's the however many books I like, and I'll just stick with that until one bombs out and I need to replace, you know?
At some point, though, there's a tipping point. You can only fit so many comics into your reading list. You can only fit so many in there. So something's got to give at some point.
True, true. But I think there's something to be said for new titles being able to push out ones that are getting either stale or not as good versus just sticking with that and needing to get an opening in your list.
And a lot of times for me, it goes week to week because some of the shipping weeks are a lot lighter than others.
Yeah.
And it's easier for me to sample something one week than it would be, you know, first week of the month or something. Sometimes those are just jam-packed.
No, I know exactly how you mean with that. I've had times where, you know, I'll get twice as much one week as I'll get in some other given week.
So publishers out there, if you really want to try to break in the crowded marketplace, save it for that fifth week of the month. Make your title hit then when nothing else is out. And
I would almost take that a step further. Do it the last week of the year. If you time it on the right year and it's essentially, because we've had a couple of years where it's a skip week. I don't think that'll be the case this year, but I'm not positive. But
I think, like, there were 8 books last year.
Yeah, exactly. If you've got 8 books and one of them is a big new release from, you know, imagine if that had been when Tooth and Claw number 1 came out. It would have been such an excellent opening for that title. It's like, well, you know, there's not much to read. Oh, it's $2.99 book. I'll try that. See how that goes. You know, it's a great way to get new readers. But, you know, your point of put the book out there when there's less new things crowding it off the shelf, that just makes sense to do. But it's also something easy to say, hard to do, because until you solicit and everybody else does, you don't know when their books are coming out.
True. And you know, you go through the same thing. Some weeks you'll say, I've got 78 books this week. You know, that's a little daunting.
I don't think I've gone that high.
It's got to be close.
I've definitely done, I think, over 60. I would have to.
I knew it was a big number.
Yeah. There have been a couple of weeks it's crazy big.
If I'm pushing 25, it's really tough to get through them all and give them the time they need.
Well, I did a lot of reading this week. I still have a lot left to do. It was a busy week for me. I had jury duty this week. So I had to you know, get up, get downtown, fight the traffic, bring lunch and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, by the time I got home and had to do a couple of things, I haven't finished all my reading, and worse, what I have read, I haven't, you know, tabulated, so I don't have in front of me. Oh, wow, this was great. I ought to mention this. There were some good things this week. There were also a few things. It's like, wow, that was not what I was expecting from that issue.
Are you still reading Birthright?
I am not. I did not continue after the first.
Well, I know you had mentioned, you know, I wonder where it's going. Why don't you let me know?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it is just kind of straddling that line between flashing back to when the kid was captured and those first moments in that other world and how he got from being kidnapped to being that barbarian that was sitting in the middle of the cop station. And and the other side is reestablishing the relationship with his parents and brother. And that we seem to be going back and forth that way.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't really touched on the big reveal from the end of that issue one, about him being like a double or a triple agent. We're not really sure. And so maybe that'll go away for a while, because that was really the weakest part of the book for me. So I'm kind of glad that they haven't touched on that again, but it still works really well, and I think it's improving. But if there was nothing in that first issue that grabbed you, I don't think you should come back, because it's more of the same.
Nothing particularly turned me off to that, but it was also nothing that really made me think I've got to continue with it. And again, I'm getting, you know, 50, 60 books a week, that some of these things, and it's more for non-universe books that have the harder time here. If there's nothing pulling me in and nothing else kind of compensating for that, you know, it's hard for me to add something to my list sometimes, you know, and it's nothing wrong with the material. Sometimes it could be really good. It's just, yeah, it's not a story I want to follow or need to follow.
I had another great issue of Injustice, Gods Among Us, the latest digital installment, featured Dead Man pretty heavily. And we had a Secret Origins with Dead Man in it recently. And that's just a character I've always liked, and read him years and years ago, and I always liked that character. And it's just cool to see him being used in this way,
mm-hmm.
so prevalently. And Injustice is, I don't know why it works so well, as well as it does, but man, it is the first thing I read. It is such a great read, such fun read. It works wonderfully on a tablet, being landscape. It, you know, it's a breeze because it's only really half an issue. This thing is just fantastic. Hats off to Tom Taylor. I hope he never quits doing this.
Well, then you're not going to like the question I'm about to ask you. How do you think it's going to do when he gets off and the new writer gets on?
I think it's going to bomb.
I hope it doesn't.
I think he probably the driving force on this thing.
I definitely think he is. I think somebody else has the potential of coming in behind him and still doing a good job, but tough act to follow.
Don't you have to be like a swashbuckling type of a writer that can kind of take everything that's rooted in continuity and then bend it but don't break it to do this book well?
Yeah, I think so, because I think that's part of what Tom Taylor has done, is he's really pushed the boundaries and just slowly and continually nudged these characters to where they've gotten. If a new writer just comes in and says, well, that's where they are and that's where they stay or something, that'd be a mistake. Or if he moves them counter to the direction they've been going, or pushes them too far, too fast, or whatever. I mean, there are a lot of ways it could go wrong, but if there's a smooth handoff, and if the new writer, and I forget who it is, if the new writer understands the book, then I think they can continue running with it and do pretty well.
Year four, there'll be a new writer?
I'm not sure when they make the transition. I was just reading it on, I think, Comic Book Resources today as we record, which is Thursday evening.
Yeah, Tom Taylor tweeted something about, I have a big announcement coming, and I fired back, you better never leave Justice, ever.
Well, what I read is it's getting chalked up to he's just got a lot on his plate. So, I mean, there's only so many things they could do. He's had a really good run on that title.
Yeah, sales have fallen. I mean, it's down, way down there, so I understand.
Well, I don't think right now, frankly, it's as good as it was earlier in the run. So I can see somebody else coming in and just it maybe needing a little bit of fresh blood or something in that respect.
I don't think it's as new as it was then, of course, but I still think it's just as good.
It has its moments. It's had some weak spots is all I'm saying. Yeah. Whereas early on, it was just continually strong.
Well, I really liked embracing all the Justice League Dark characters in this year's run, this year's set of issues, this volume. And it's really, I thought, worked really well. And
I think it was more the end of Volume 2 and aspects of Volume 2 that I thought were weak. Volume 3 that they've done has been pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I will agree with you that the issue, yeah, the way that Year 2 kind of ended was not as strong as some of the other stuff. But yeah, I think this year has been great.
I want to see them continue to be successful at that. I want to see Tom Taylor be able to move on to other stuff and be successful there, too. Now, one of the things that came out this week that I read, and I thought it was all right, but it surprised me, and that was Iron Fist Living Weapon number 7. And what surprised me is that it came out, because it's been like 3 months since issue 6 came out. Is the title over? You know, I was wondering if it had ended. For something that, in theory, although I don't know if they've necessarily explicitly stated this, but in theory it's a monthly book. I was disappointed by the delay. Hulk was really good. Enjoyed that. What else?
Did you read the Angela Asgard assassin book?
I did. I thought it was all right.
That's where I'm at. It was all right.
You know, some of the Asgardian stuff, some of the Thor stuff, sometimes it really works for me. Sometimes it really doesn't. It's just hard to relate to. And this fell into the hard to really relate to. You know, I don't tend to hang out with, you know, cosmic demigods or gods or, you know, whatever you want to qualify the Asgardians as. And the whole politics, all that kind of stuff, the heaven and all.
Not your bag.
You know, I'll give it a bit, see how it goes. But yeah, it had a little bit of an uphill battle and it's not doing so well on it.
Colin Bunn's first issue of a 6-issue miniseries called Wolf Moon came out. And this is a Vertigo book. And it's pretty much seems like a straight up werewolf story. And nothing really exceptional about this first issue. It is only 6 issues and it's Colin Bond. So I'm probably going to stick around, at least to see how it goes. But yeah, the first issue was not off the charts.
Did you read the 4th issue of Cloaks?
No, I didn't.
That came out this week? That came out, yeah. I'll be curious what you think of it because.
The 4th of 4?
4th of 4, I believe, yeah.
Okay.
Although it's, at least I'm pretty sure it's a 4-issue miniseries. I could be wrong on that. It ended such that there's more story to tell, but they could do that with another miniseries in a bit or a 5th issue, depending what they choose to do. I don't think a 5th issue's been solicited yet, though. But there was one place where they do kind of a flashback reveal sort of a thing, and I read it. I understood what they were telling me happened. I don't get it. I'm curious what other people thought and if they can explain it to me. And once you read it, it'll make sense. And it didn't deteriorate the book for me at all. I really enjoyed it. It's got great art, great story, and I would like to see them do more of it. It had a fun energy to it.
Yeah, a lot of other stuff was just okay. The names, number 4, was okay, but kind of a transitional issue. Nailbiter 8. If you like Criminal Minds
I used television. To watch that, but around the end of season 6, maybe.
Yeah.
It started getting a bit darker, and yes. I tuned out.
When it took that turn, amp that up a little bit, and then you have Nailbiter. So it's very serial killer and extreme serial killer stuff in there. So it's a little tough to take. Low by Rick Remender and Greg Ticini is really strong, though. It's on issue 5, and that came out this week. Beautiful book to read. Great world that's being built. Very expansive under ocean world that's being built, and it continues to be very strong, though.
Cool.
Marvel was really... I hardly read anything from Marvel. Guardians and an Angela book, that's it.
Legendary Star-Lord was fun. Hulk was good. What else did Marvel have this week that I liked? Still got one or two things left to read from them.
Read the latest Grayson. It was pretty good.
I liked it. It was not the issue I was expecting.
Yeah.
they left it with certain expectations as to what would happen, and this, it's like, I felt like I skipped an issue. Actually, I should check. Did I? I mean, because where they left off, Grayson had just got kind of a talking to, and it's like, well, next week you're going to do this, and then what we got was nothing like that. And, of course, time could have elapsed. That's fine. That's good, but...
This was a standalone issue. Real, you know, if you haven't been reading, you could pop in on this and not need any backstory, really.
I would agree with that. It's a good thing to get a feel for the tone, the style of the book. And I liked the basic story it told there, the gist of it. But it also felt like this was one of those issues, good though it was, you could have skipped and...
Oh, easily skippable, yes.
You know, and that kind of disappoints me. I'd rather they do whatever they're setting out to do on this title. I'm really enjoying it a lot more than I thought I would. When they took Nightwing, stripped him of his superheroic identity, and turned him into a super spy, I was very curious if that would work or not. It's been a lot of fun. And as much as I want to see a Titans series, and I think the TNT show has been greenlit for a pilot, I think. As much as I want to see that, I think a Grayson series based on this series, this comic title, could be a lot of fun as well, provided you cast it well. Which, you know, that's true for any show.
Yeah, I'm not sure where Grayson's going. I'm not sure. You know, we're just going to be collecting body parts, magical body parts, to infinity. You know, are we going to figure out any of the... kind of behind-the-scenes stuff of the mysterious...
That's one where we need to find out more about what Spiral's goal is, what their agenda and the plan is, who is Helena Bertinelli. There's a lot of questions they've been dancing around, and they need to actually start making some progress on that. You know, anytime you dangle those things and you feel like you're in a holding pattern, it gets old after a while. So,
3 issues into Lobo, I kind of think I have a sense for what this is all about now. It seems a little more of a team book now than it started out. It seems to have evolved a little. Did you feel that?
I have not gotten to that one yet.
Okay.
So I'm curious about that. Interesting. I would not have expected it to have become a team book, but I'll read it, and that's interesting.
Yeah, it's a different kind of a different dynamic than what I thought we were going to be in for. But it's okay. It's not. There's nothing wrong with it.
No, but I think it goes towards publishers need to pitch a new title a little bit better and give a better sense of what sort of a book it's going to be, what trajectory it's on, what direction are they pitching it in, if you will.
Right.
Just because it gives you a better sense of, is this something I should read or not? Because really, if somebody skips the first few issues, the odds of them getting on board, I think, drop significantly. But, you know, it's the better they pitch the title, the better off they are.
Unless they have a review show. Then sometimes you can come in late.
As has happened to me a few times.
Yes, and me too.
That's why people should listen to review shows. They should read the books. They should, you know, expand their reading list just to see what's out there. Dabble in stuff, even if you're pretty sure you... I mean, if you're positive you're not going to like it, yeah, it's a waste of time. But if it's a, you know, if it looks interesting. The bottom line, never go into a comic shop, say, hey, I've got, where's my books on my pull list? Okay, got it, check out, and you're done. That's a mistake. Look at what's on the rack, go through previews, talk to people, look at the websites, listen to reviews. There are great comics out there for everybody. It just takes a little work to go find them for you.
And there were a lot of great comics this year, and we have a year-end episode coming up in a few weeks from now. And we have posted something on the forum with all the various categories, and there's more categories than you can shake a stick at, and feel free to chime in on the forum and add your 2 cents on what you think is the best series from DC, or who the new best new shining star is at Marvel, and all publishers in between. There's all kinds of miscellaneous categories on there. John and I are going to have a lot of fun talking about all this, but we want some listener opinions as well, and some of feel free to chime in and tell us what you think. It should be right there near the top on the forum.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to recording that. I'm also dreading recording that, to be honest. It takes me forever to figure out what are my picks.
Well, you know what? You're a step ahead this year because you've been tracking all year long, and you've got all your 5 laid out, so you can click your little spreadsheet and you'll have a snapshot of stuff to choose from.
That's certainly what I'm hoping, and by the time I'm done with that episode, I may make some changes to this, depending how well the spreadsheet works out or not. Certainly, I need to add some code to it to go spit out a few things for me. But yeah, this is actually the first year where I have reviewed everything I've gotten on a weekly basis for the most part. There may be a few here that I just didn't get around to or whatever.
So actually, we're looking at 2,200 to 2,400 books, something like that?
Oh, geez. That is...
Because you're about 200 a week, right? Or 200 a month. 200 a month, right?
Yeah, not 200 a week. That's crazy, even for me.
It's a little over 200 a month, isn't it?
2,328 is what I've got so far. So
you have a numerical grade for every one of those? 1 through 5 for every one of those.
I'm checking. Hang on.
That'll be fun.
I reorganized my spreadsheet at one point, and I have 2,276 numerical scores.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's and again, a couple of more weeks to put in here. I think 3 or 4 more weeks.
On the other hand, have some post-it notes stuck around, and I'm scrambling like a madman trying to put my list together. So it'll be very different styles that we approach this.
Yeah, it will be, and I'm curious how well my approach is going to pan out for me or not. I'll have much better visibility, I think, as to what I've gotten this year, but those are always tough episodes to do. Just because it's like, what did I read back in January? It's like, okay, I'll know, and I'll have a better sense of what I thought, but, you know, as to which titles were the best, which creators. The creators I haven't been tracking, so that's going to be a hard one for me. But certainly want to hear what everybody thinks. I think, by and large, it's been a really good year for comics. I think next year, 2015, is going to be just crazy given, you know, the events, the Secret Wars, Convergence, and all of those things. So, but it's always fun when listeners kind of point out something and I'm thinking, oh man, I should have picked that because... So yeah, definitely check that thread out. Also, I believe the online solicits should be coming out this week as you listen to this. So that would be, what, the week of the 15th of December, sometime during that week.
These are February or March?
February, I believe.
Which is usually the worst month of the year for comics.
January, right? February, usually both kind of weak. I think some of it depends how much people spend and how much stores have, you know, both how much have they spent and therefore how much can they not afford on comics, and then how much have they spent or not spent and how much can shops not afford on comics.
Right.
You know, it could be a double whammy. But if nothing else, previews drops in price a little bit, so that's always nice. So, but take a look at the online solicits, figure out what you're going to do for the preview spotlight, because there's going to be a period in January there where we're going to be doing all the year-end stuff, the yearly comic spotlight we were just talking about. I'm going to be recording not only the December sales numbers, but the 2014 overall sales numbers. And then, of course, my mom, my dad, my sister all have birthdays at the beginning of January, so there's plenty of stuff for me to be doing. So if everybody has their clips kind of organized and I know how much time to set aside for that, that's always really appreciated. And the listeners have been doing a great job with that. And we've been getting some great clips, too. Gosh, really enjoy that.
Yeah, I haven't heard the last one that just came out, so I'm looking forward to listening to that one. You say the numbers are out already? You're doing the new sales already?
They are not. I was expecting them last week, but as we record this, the 11th, I think Friday morning, the 12th, the top 10 will come out, and then Monday, the full set. So,
and that's a week late?
I don't think it's a week late. I think I was expecting them a week early.
Ah, gotcha.
It's usually it's around this time of the month. It's often the first Friday, but sometimes the first Friday is too early, and I haven't figured out if it's the first full week and then the first Friday or how it works. I've had other things on my mind, so I was just guesstimating, and I was off by a week. It happens. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think it'll do it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Constantine number 20 from DC, Spider-Man and the X-Men number 1 from Marvel, and Eternal number 1 from Boom Studios. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.